all the way in from Texas, our speaker is Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you, baby. Thank you.
My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
I'm going to stand. I've tried to talk sitting a couple times, and I can't do it. I don't know what that is about. I don't know. It's like I couldn't talk if I couldn't move my hands. It'd be the same kind of thing, you know. So I'm gonna stand for just a second anyway. What an honor to be here. It's like old home week. I know so many of y'all in this room. I've been up to this area a few times now, and I'm dating a damn Yankee. What can I say? And this is so. I look for any excuse to come up here, and it's what a place to be. I'm honored to be here, and some of you guys, I tell you, do us proud in this fellowship. I'm a chronic relapser. I just need to tell you, I'm going to keep an eye on the clock. I got about 35 minutes with you, and I want to talk a little bit about how I got here and what happened once I did get here. But I just need to tell you, going in the door, some of y'all have heard me speak before, and I'll try not to rant and rave too much tonight. I understand. And some of you have never heard me before. Some of you have heard some tapes of mine, and I have a tendency to get out there kind of. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what can I say. I nearly died getting to this fellowship. I went to my first AA meeting in about 1980, and as I was losing a first wife, and third and fourth business was in jeopardy, and the health was bad, and the depression's kicking my butt, and I need some help. And a therapist who knew what the problem was said, you ought to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my journey started about 1979, 1980. I forget. I don't remember most of the 80s. There's a whole decade I've kind of lost. I can't pinpoint it down, you know, but the long and short of it is, as I was around the fellowship for a bunch of years and couldn't get sober, I was talking to a buddy of mine whose brother I know in Texas, and we were talking about the necessity to pay attention to what we're saying in meetings, and I'm going to tell you, I'm a firm believer in that. Any of you cats in this room that believe that you can go into any meeting you want to and share whatever you want to, you're wrong. You're wrong, and I'll never stop saying that from the podium, and if that offends you, you know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. Next week, this will be your nickel, and you can get up here and share how you believe we can share anything we want. But you see, his problem was in this fellowship was that he kept coming. When we get a newcomer that comes to our fellowship, what we're looking for, now, I don't know, maybe your case is different. My case was, I was looking for any excuse in the world to turn around and leave. You know what I'm saying? I want to get well. I want the pain to stop. But I hate Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I hate you. You know, I mean, let's just get to the day. I don't like your smile. I don't like your happiness. I don't like the fact that you smell good. I don't like the fact that you drive a nice car, you know, and it's just you got a nice girlfriend. I hate you, you know, because I'm so miserable inside. And I walk into these rooms, and the first thing I'm looking for is an excuse to leave. And I'm going to tell you something. We got a fellowship out there, folks, not just in AA and NA and Cocaine Anonymous. We got a lot of fellowships out here that have gotten so far off track with the message we're supposed to be carrying that we do the newcomer a big service. Because they'll sit in a meeting for 5 minutes and find about 15 reasons to walk the heck out of this door. And so we got to be careful what we're supposed to be doing. Our priority, our main purpose is what I want to talk about tonight some. And I know we've got a little format, and I want to try to stick with that format as much as possible. But I believe the tradition that says that our primary purpose is working with others, is carrying the clear message of hope to that alcoholic, it needs to be discussed. And I think all of us need to get on that same page. I think, one, because we're going to get so... Let me tell you what happened to me, and it'll clear it up where I'm coming from. Or maybe not. Maybe just confuse the daylights out of you. But in 1980, when I got to the fellowship, what I didn't hear... I was in the food business, and real quick, and make a long story, I was successful in the food business. I was a chef for years, and I started as a cook and got an apprenticeship program and trained and worked hard and got under some good cats that knew what they were doing. And of course, they were all drunks too, just like me, and we got along famously. Early on in my disease, I could drink a lot of alcohol, you know, and you know, like so many of us in this room, I was a functioning alcoholic. I'm not one of these unlucky souls that started blacking out when they were 16. I had a lot of years of successful drinking and very social and out there on the edge and doing a lot of crazy stuff. It was quite successful. And What was apparent, though, at a very early age was that the depression was going to kill me. And I was not a real happy camper. And early on in my career, I started seeing therapists for the depression and taking antidepressants for the depression. And it was kind of a nasty deal. There's a lot of people out there that believe that depression can be treated with a pill, and I think if you're clinically depressed, it can be treated with a pill. I think if you're suffering from alcoholism, you're barking up the wrong tree. Spiritual malady that the book talks about cannot be treated with a pill, and it can help, but it's not going to fix what's wrong with you. And that's the problem that we had in the early 70s and 80s. We had a lot of people out there trying to self-medicate with antidepressants, trying to get past the drinking, and it never would work. I drink. As Peter said it the other day so well. I got to hear Peter Thursday night, and Peter said it so well. You know, I'm not drinking to have a ha-ha, good time, fun. See, I'm drinking to just get well, to just start feeling better in my little insides. And that's, I mean, I want to get up, have a couple of drinks, and go to work. I don't want to get up and call in sleepy and not go to work. I mean, I want to get through the day in one piece, and that's all I'm trying to do. The alcohol allowed me to do that. You follow us? And that's what the problem is. If it was just about having too much fun, Chris, you party too dang much, then we just quit. We just grow up. That's not the case. I have to drink to get through the day. I have to drink to ask you for a date. I have to drink to apply for a job. I have to drink to go to the laundromat. I have to drink to go to the grocery store. You with me? And that's what alcoholism is. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. It's a damn sad disease. Because as this progresses, folks, you can't do much of anything unless you've got a drink. I was talking to Patty earlier about a friend of ours, and she went and got him a bottle, you know, and understanding that the cat needed to drink first, and then we would talk. Because that's what we need to do. And I think what happens to us in our fellowship, I wish we had a little bit longer, we could talk about it, but in our fellowship, we come from all walks of life. And there's some of you in here that can't relate to what I'm saying because you're not even alcoholic. You never needed to drink to feel okay inside. You just partied a little too much, got caught, got a DWI, they slammed you in AA, and you've been here ever since. You're not going to relate to anything I've got to say. Mm-hmm. And I don't care. But, you know, I don't. Because I gave up a long time ago trying to be Mr. I mean, you can't please everybody. What can I say? I'm a real, real alcoholic. Just like I'm a real McCoy. I got a drink to get okay. My internal condition is not okay. And when I take that drink, it fixes what's wrong with me. And when the stuff worked, it was great. And then it stopped working, and it was very, very bad. Y'all follow me? And guys, I watch people. I do clerical work at a treatment center. And I'm going to tell you, I watch people daily die from this disease. You know, and then it offends me sometimes when I come into our meetings, and all we want to hear is this flippant little joke. You know, we want to take up somebody's time telling our stupid war stories. And I get a little tired of that crap. I'm just reading today. We were in the Bill's story, and it talks about never mind the musty past. He's sitting across from Abby. He says, "Never mind the musty past, man. Look who's sitting in front of me now. This guy's on different ground." That's the message that we need to be carrying to the newcomer. And see, but I'm going to tell you something, folks. My story, maybe not your story. My story. In 1980, when I got to the fellowship, that was not my experience. My story was when I walked into AA, I got to hear a bunch of people tell their stupid war stories until I almost died. And when we finished telling the war stories, we got into a pissing and moaning contest to see who could complain the loudest about the day. Unbelievable. I got to tell you, number one relapse. I've watched this for years in my own story, and I've watched it working with other alcoholics and addicts around the fellowship. My experience is this. The number one cause of relapse today is self-pity. Self-pity. Feeling sorry for yourself. Look what they did to me this time. Gunk, 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 gunk. Done it 1,000 times myself. Watched 1,000 of you guys do it. And so what do we do in our meetings? 9 times out of 10, when we turn them into little discussion meetings, open discussion, start them with, well, who's got the problem? Well, I got the problem. Huh? We don't want to hear your problem. I couldn't care less. I couldn't. I don't give a rat's butt about your problem. Because I'm going to tell you something, folks. I'm on this big kick now. You can listen to some of the later tapes that I'm doing. We're hitting this thing so hard it's not even funny. Alcoholics Anonymous is not now, nor ever was it intended to be, therapy. Alcoholics Anonymous is not therapy. Alcoholics Anonymous is not therapy. It's not therapy. I don't know how many ways I can say it. It's not therapy. I don't know. Pick your way. I don't know whether it's David. A lot of you believe it is because that's what the stupid treatment center that sent you here told you. You got a problem? Go to a meeting and talk about it. If that's what you've been doing, great. You're welcome. Thanks for coming. Don't come back. I don't know what to tell you. Come back, but let's learn something new. Let's learn something different. Why don't a bunch of us, I know a bunch of y'all in this room and y'all are on the same page with me, but some of you guys, you're looking at me like deer in the headlights, like I can't believe he's talking like that from the podium. Why don't we learn something new tonight? Why don't we come at this thing with an open mind for a new experience about what this is about? In 1979, 1980, I got to this fellowship and I was dying and I'm walking into these meetings and all you're doing is talking about your stuff and I can't get well because nobody will tell me about what you read. You know, when you were reading How It Works, the preamble, when you were reading the first part of this, and you were talking about the prefaces, and you were reading about being a recovered alcoholic, and you were making a special point to hit the word recovered, you know? And I'm going to tell you something. I almost leapt up and hugged you in the middle of that deal. You know, it's like, I mean, we ought to be swapping spit over this thing. You know, this is the best. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Guys, This is the 13th of the month. If I don't do anything really stupid, exactly a month from today, I'll have 15 years of sobriety. November 13th, 87 is my sobriety. Yeah. And how cool is it that for nearly 15 years, I haven't wanted to take a drink? We paint this picture of treatment for some of these poor schlups. It's like every day is a day that you could drink. You know, it's like there's a line in the book that says that in Fred's, I think it's Fred's where he's talking, it was only be a matter of me keeping on guard. You know, we do it in treatment center, we tell it, just be careful. Keep on guard. Watch out what's going on. I mean, we ought to issue freaking camo gear to everybody that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous because we're going to be doing a lot of keeping on guard, I got to tell you. That's what I tried to do for years, guys, was keep on guard. You see, guys, I can't keep myself sober. And somewhere along the line, in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, when we had a great success rate, we understood that AA was a spiritual program. And somewhere along the line, we turned it into a self-help program, where we're all going to sit around and help each other stay sober. Let me tell you something, folks. I need your fellowship. But you can't fix what's wrong with me. I need your friendship. I need your guidance in some other areas of my life, but you can't fix what's wrong with me. If the desire to use returns to Chris Raymer, Chris Raymer's going to drink. 15 years ago, God removed the obsession for me to drink. And some of you in this room, God has removed your obsession to drink. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. And some of you are mad at me now because God hasn't removed your obsession. And you want to go out and get a shot of dope right now. You want to go get some alcohol right now so bad you can taste it and you're pissed. How dare that little one-eyed guy come up? I'll be glad when he gets his ass back to Texas. I just, you know, he can't come up here and talk to us like that. Well, you know, some of us are just going to have days when we want to drink. Listen, my book gets quite clear about it. If you want to drink, you haven't recovered. And if you haven't recovered, it's because you haven't done the work. It's just that simple. You know, God's grace is even. It falls on everybody the same. And I'm sitting there in 1980, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 7 years around this fellowship, looking at everybody, taking everybody's inventory, because they seemed happy, joyous, and free, and I'm just such a... My life just sucks. And the truth is, it wasn't until 87, then people tolerated it. Well, Chris, you're just having a bad time. Why don't you come to the 8 o'clock meeting tonight and we'll discuss it. We'll talk about it some more. What a poor, miserable, pathetic thing you are. It was great, guys. If some of you want to try it, sympathy works great. You know, sometimes you can actually get laid that way. It's a good thing. You go through the... You wouldn't want to go to bed with me, would you? And sometimes, no, and so, how about a job if while you're at it? You know, and it's like, you know, you can milk this stuff forever. No, come on, guys. There's a payoff. There's a payoff for being a victim. There's a payoff for being a victim. And this fellowship, I'm telling you, in the early 80s was, I don't know about up here in New York, guys, but Texas was rampant. Our success rates were in the toilet because everybody turned it into this big self-help program. We're just going to jump in this big cauldron of people trying to claw them where, you know, just try to help themselves get sober. And it's just, and nobody's getting sober. Nobody's getting sober. They're buying those stupid desire chips by the bushel baskets. You know, we're just, you're giving them out endlessly. You can't, nobody stays sober. It's a crying shame. Because the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, we knew exactly how to stay sober. The book says precisely how we recovered is the whole point of the book. I'm 7 years in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and don't even own a big book. Why do I need a book? I ain't going to work your stupid steps. That's for you old big book thumping coots. Buddy, you don't understand. I'll work the stupid steps, but right now my rent's due and I need some new insurance and a few of the niceties of life. And when I get all that lined out, I'll work the steps. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. We've got a bunch of people in the fellowship that will allow that to take place. Oh, you poor thing. Take your time. Easy does it. Don't worry about it. You'll know when it's time to work the steps. Oh? 7 years and now the fellowship. Now, you know, everybody wants to come. My emails burn up with this stuff. People get me on the phone. Well, you know, Chris, I didn't want to talk to you when you were up in Fellowship of the Spirit. I didn't want to talk to you when you were talking in Canada because, you know, I didn't want to get into it with you. But now that I'm on an email and can say whatever I want and you're 3,000 miles away and nobody can screw with me, let me just tell you what an asshole you are, you know? And they just want to let me just share with me. Unbelievable. Buddy, I'm going to tell you something. The last thing on this earth that I would ever do would be intentionally try to make somebody uncomfortable. And if you're using our meetings as a dumping ground for your problems and a little piece of therapy, just keep coming back and let's try to go at this with an open mind so we can get you to in a different place. Because let me tell you something. In 1987, I walked out of an AA meeting and went back to work one day. And at the end of that day, I walked home and got a stack of return checks. And I said, "To heck with it." And for the second time in my adult life, I tried to commit suicide. And I'm sitting in the meetings trying to fix myself. And everybody I hear vaguely on the outside want to talk about a spiritual experience. And everybody wants to talk about the steps a little bit over here. But nobody will get clear with what I'm supposed to do as a newcomer. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. I've had this thrown back in my face a few times. Well, Chris, you just didn't want to get well. You know, that's our pat answer to every newcomer that ever relapses. Well, he just didn't want it. Well, he just didn't want it. Well, maybe next time. Just didn't want it. I think it's pretty arrogant of a bunch of us in this room to say something stupid like that. He wanted it bad enough to screw his courage up and get out of the car and walk into a strange building. He wanted it bad enough to sit in this stupid meeting and ask a few questions and keep coming back. But he didn't get it because nobody wanted to take time with him to tell him how to get well. Nobody wanted to tell him that you get well by working the steps. You don't get well by coming to meetings. There's two things going on here, guys. There's a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and there's the program. And the fellowship is a wonderful thing. It is the coolest. But it will not, if you're a real alcoholic, it will not get you sober. The program gets you sober. The 12 steps get you sober. The steps are a path to God. You get connected to the power. The power alleviates the need to drink. It removes the obsession to use. Did anybody tell me that for 7 years in the fellowship? Absolutely not. We're too busy standing up in front of rooms giving them absolute crap advice. But don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Huh, that's crap. That's crap. That's crap. That's more the keeping on guard stuff. That's more keeping on the guard. We're just telling it. Why? Why do we tell somebody that? Didn't work for us. Goddamn, how many times did I get loaded when I had a full belly and plenty of rest? I wasn't hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. What was the problem today? Oh, it was nothing. It was just... Guys, there's a story in the book. There's a story in the book. The Fred, the businessman, he gets up and there's the greatest line in the book. It says, it was the end of a perfect day. Y'all can read it. Not a cloud on the horizon. I sell t-shirts at the store that's got one. It's the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. And they got this drunk laying in his chair with a bottle of booze. And that was me. We sit here in these meetings and we paint this picture that if you can just manage well today and walk that little tightrope just perfect, that you won't fall on your butt. And when you do fall on your butt, we're going to throw it back at your lap and blame you. Well, I'm going to tell you something, folks. Alcoholics Anonymous needs to start taking responsibility for some of the crap that we're teaching the newcomer in our meetings. You understand a little passion here? You sense a bit of anger? I'm going to tell you, it's there and it's real. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't believe that we've got much time to work with a lot of people that are sitting in this room. Because a lot of people in this room, they don't have too many more detoxes left in them. One day at a time, it's all we got. We just keep coming back. It'll be different tomorrow. No, it won't. It'll be some more of the same crap. Until I change spiritually. And then everything shifts. Our job is not to fix the alcoholic, folks. Our job is not to fix the alcoholic. And I think it's one of the reasons that so many of you guys in this room and so many people of my friends in Texas and wherever I'm speaking, so many people that I know in the fellowship don't want to sponsor people because they don't want the responsibility of having to fix the alcoholic. We're not therapists in this group. We're spiritual mentors. We have one message. What? I have a little something I'd like to read to you. This is a great little excerpt. It's in a little pamphlet called Problems Other Than Alcohol. My buddy Bill put this on two little pages. I made a million copies of these and passed them out in AA groups surreptitiously. Nobody knows where they came from. I'm telling you, I dropped them off. You blame me. Here. He says, sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. Groups have repeatedly tried other activities, therapy, legal advice, medical advice. Just stop taking those antidepressants. Screw you. Mind your own business. Can you tell me how to get connected to God? No? Then shut up. Then shut up. Because that's all your job is to do here. Can you do one thing well? Here it is. Groups have repeatedly tried other activities and they have always failed. Our chief responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program. As Bill sees it. It's in a letter in 1946, I believe. My chief responsibility to the newcomer, I don't care if I'm in New York or Texas, wherever I'm at, is a clear understanding of what the 12 steps are about. You don't want to hear about the 12 steps? Then I've got nothing to share with you. Nothing. But we get so many people leaving our fellowship because they get sick and tired of getting caught in this cul-de-sac of trying to fix the alcoholic and addict. We're not here to help you with your medical problems. We're not here to help you with your mental problems. We have doctors. We have referrals. We can help you get connected to people that can help you. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know nothing about relationships. Can you imagine the walk into a room full of people that have probably been divorced more times than anybody. Looking for advice on relationships? Come on, guys. I don't know nothing about none of that. Damn. What I do know is this. In 1987, when I walked back into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous after that suicide attempt, I walked into a room full of people a lot like you, and they were all laughing, and they were good-looking, and they were having a great time, and they were all carrying a big book. They all had a book like this, and was sitting on the tables, and they were long shotgun, they were all smoking cigarettes, and I walked into that room, and I knew the minute I walked in that I'd screwed up. Because this didn't seem like the sensitive, quiet group that I was... I was waiting for them to say, who's got the problem? Because, buddy, I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. I got a lot of problems that I really need to share with you, you know? And this group, they didn't want to hear any of that crap. They didn't want to hear it. They didn't give me a chance to share. What they did was, we got a newcomer in this room. Let's all go around. Guys, I'll never forget the chairperson and what he said. He said, let's share instead of our war stories about how we got here, because Chris has been around this fellowship forever. We all know him. They've watched every one of them in there handed me a desire chip at one time or another. And they said, we don't want to play this game. Why don't we share the good stuff? Why don't we share why we stay in this fellowship? Give me a 1 or 2 minute, how is your life better today as a result of the steps? Just like Bill Wilson. Never mind the musty past. Tell me about today. Because if my life's not better today, folks, why am I still here? Why am I so passionate? Because my life for the last 15 years has continually got better. I've had low moments. I've been through some tough times, but I come out smelling like a rose every time. And it's like, we just did a third step prayer. The third step prayer said, God is going to remove my difficulties, so victory over the difficulties. What is that telling me? That God's going to remove the difficulties. All we got to do is suit up and show up and see what the miracle's going to be. You see, and when I got to the fellowship, I didn't believe any of that was going to happen. I got to tell you a quick story real quick. Because I was talking to Kat the other day about it, and that first AA meeting I was there, and I was sober a year or so, and I'd hit the floor running, and I'd worked the steps, and I was active in the fellowship, and a lot of good stuff had come my way. But about the year and a half, I got complacent. The book talks about sitting on our laurels, and I got a little complacent. You know, I got a little girlfriend on the side, you know, and I'm making a little money, but the depression's coming back at warp speed, and I'm not a happy camper. And the truth of the matter is, I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. The spiritual malady is returning. The spiritual sickness is returning. I'm sitting in meetings every night, but I'm not doing the work. And a newcomer walk in, stand up there, look like a newcomer, you know, and I'll look the other way. Don't look now. He might come over here, and I don't want to screw with him tonight. I don't know. Let's just talk, like, you know, and what we do. We get in our little clique, we smoke our little cigarettes, we look around, you know, and the newcomer sits over there and looks like lost. Shame on us. Mm-hmm. And I'm guilty as I can be of doing it. And that's what was going on with me about a year and a half, 2 years into the fellowship. And I remember coming into a 6 o'clock meeting one night, and this girl, it turned out to be the same girl that got between me and the door the night that I walked into AA and wouldn't let me out. She was a little 19-year-old girl, and she hooked her little finger in my belt and set me down and said, "Sit down, buddy. You're not going anywhere," because I was backing out. I didn't want to listen to your laughter. I wanted to go home and finish the job I'd started the night before. Because this time I was going to make it stick. I'm hurting too bad, folks. And she wouldn't let me up. And if it hadn't been for that little 19-year-old girl, I'd have been dead tonight. Bless her. Bless her. She's up there at this meeting, right? 2 years. I'm about 2 years, I guess, sober. And she's up at this meeting chair. And beginning of the meeting, she says, "Before we get started, I'd like to share a thing that happened to me in sobriety." And she had a set of car keys on the table, and she lifted them up, and she's jingling the car keys, and I could see this new set of keys, you know, got the dealer tag on it, you know, and I'm going, "Oh, shit." See, I'm 2 years sober, and I'm still driving the old beat-up pickup truck I came in on, you know? I mean, and this punk, this kid, she got her brand new ride outside. And I'm grinding my teeth the whole meeting. I'm just pissed. I'm just, you know, thanks God. 2 years. I've been here, been of service to you. Now this little girl has got a brand new car, and I'm still driving this old banged up self-pity. Y'all got it? I'm walking out the door. I'm wearing one of those, my uniform was a, I don't know if they, Fruit of the Loom t-shirts, you know, with a little pocket on it, and you wash it about 1,000 times, you know, because that's all you got, and by the time, the pocket used to be over here when it was new, and now it's right here in the center. You know the kind I'm talking about? Gary, you probably got a dozen of them in your closet. You know, it's like, that's what we wore. I was working in a warehouse, for heaven's sake. I'm walking out the door, and I threw my dollar down, and I walked out, and my sponsor, he was sitting right across the door, he could see what was going on. I was fuming. And I'm like, and he grabbed me around, he grabbed me in the collar like this, and as he put, I'm pulling, and it rips. Oh, great. Now, I'm driving an old beat-up car and a torn shirt now. You know, he said, "Buddy, we need to talk. You sat through this whole meeting and ground your teeth. Now, let me ask you some questions, buddy. Let's talk about this. First off, before you do, let's go up and congratulate her for the good things that have happened in her life." I said, "You kiss my butt." To heck with her and her car. Dig? Self-pity. I'm going to tell you something. That man saved my life that night. He grabbed me around the little neck. No, and he pulled me out the back door. And he says, "Now, Mr. Big Shot, let's go over your little life. Let's do a little 10th, 11th, and 12th step right now. Where are you at in your fellowship? Where are you at in your program? I ain't seeing you chairing a meeting. In 6 months, you haven't chaired a meeting. How many guys are you sponsoring?"
"Well, it's a..."
"Excuse me? How many?"
"Well, I'm not sponsoring anybody right now."
"Oh, great. We got about 8 treatment centers in about a 20-mile radius cranking out thousands of alcoholics a week into our fellowship, and you've got nobody to sponsor. Why is that?" "Because you're selfish and self-centered to the core." Selfish and self-centeredness, my book says, is the root of the trouble. And now a little girl who's active in the fellowship and had been busting her butt since the day she walked in here is starting to reap the rewards of this world. And you, you little arrogant pissant. You with me? No, but come on, guys. Everybody says, I would have just died if my sponsor had ever talked to me like that. You're going to die anyway. What is this? This is nuts. You're going to go out and drink anyway. This man loved me enough to tell me the truth. He got right in my face and said, buddy, no, listen, look at your behavior. Look at what you're doing. You're fixing to wah yourself right out of here because you're feeling sorry for yourself. Why don't you do what she's doing and see what God brings you? And it took us about 30 minutes to get past this. And I did exactly what he said. And I went up and thanked her for chairing the meeting. And I hugged her little neck. And I even took her ride around the block in that stupid car of hers. You follow me? And I'm grinding my teeth the whole way. But here's... Oh, jeez. Let me tell you what happened. Immediately after that, though, I started doing what he asked me to do. And I went in the meeting hall, and I put my name on the board, and I signed up for a couple of meetings. You follow me? And they needed an intergroup rep at the time, and I signed up for intergroup rep, and anything else that they asked me to do, by God, I was there. I started putting Alcoholics Anonymous back on the front burner again. Because I'm 2 years sober, folks, and I'm ready to back out of this fellowship, the fellowship that saved my life. And that's why I couldn't stay sober. And now I'm there, and I'm back on the front line, firing line of life again, and life got good. I'm going to tell you something, guys. Life is great. That's the truth. That's the truth. Life is the best. It's the things that happened, folks. I had some good times and bad times. I was in a marriage for about 9 years, and that went south a year or so ago, and I met Patty, and... Patty broke us up, and you know, we just... Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I met Patty. We started visiting a little bit. No, we have a wonderful relationship, and I got a great job that I love, and I just bought a little house down there in the hill country that y'all can all come visit. It's the coolest. I get a chance to not isolate myself like I was doing for the last few years. I get a chance to get back on the firing line of Alcoholics Anonymous again, and I'm so honored to have the chance to do that. The desire to drink has been removed from me, folks, and hadn't returned in 15 years. And that's the message we need to carry to the newcomer. Our arrogance and what we hear in meetings is that some of us are going to have that experience and others are not. And that's absolute crap. Everybody that I know that has worked the steps has had the same experience. And I need to say this, because I think sometimes what happens, especially in the circle of men and women that I hang with, sometimes we become a bit anal about these steps. Folks, the steps are very general in nature. And I'm not real sure that I want to get up here and split hairs with somebody about how they work the steps. The book says what it means and means what it says, and I believe we need to go along those lines. But the book and Bill's story says quite clearly we're each going to share our story, the way we work the steps. It's not about how you work the steps, folks. It's the attitude that you brought to it. Mm-hmm. Somebody walked up to my desk the other day and dropped an 80-page four-step. Boy, you got to get this. You got to look at this. 80 pages. Can you imagine me dropping that on a newcomer's desk? He'd just go out and shoot himself. Is it a good four-step? I couldn't tell you. Because I took it like this and just dumped it in the garbage. Why is it that we took a very simple thing called a four-step that could have been done in about 30 or 40 minutes, and we've turned it into this... very simple program, folks, designed to work in a very few days. And we want to take it and turn it into some goddamn complicated... It's just not that critical. Steps are important. I'm going to say it again. I believe it's the attitude we bring into the steps. A cursory look at the websites. Guys, there's people out there that workshop every other weekend about how to do this and how to do that and how to do this and how to do that. You got talking to a guy last night, I got drunk because I didn't make all my amends. I'm going to submit something to you. That's a crock of shit. You got drunk because you weren't actively out there working with another alcoholic. And that's what my book said. That's my experience. You don't have to agree with it if you don't want to. My experience is this. If my sobriety is based on making one single amends, I'm in trouble. If my sobriety is based on the fact that I missed meditation this morning, one day, I'm in trouble. If my sobriety is based on the fact that I didn't do a 400 name resentment inventory, Guys, I don't have that much resentment in me. I didn't 15 years ago. Give me 10 good names. Give me 10 names of the names that are blocking you up from the sunlight of the Spirit. The 10 names that you're grinding your teeth over. Let's finish the stupid thing. Get to the fourth column. Look at your part. Let's go make some amends to the cats that we need to make amends to. And then let's get back out there like we're supposed to be doing on the firing line of life, kicking butt and taking names. We need to be bearing witness to God's power. We don't need to be holed off someplace analyzing and splitting hairs about these steps. They were not intended to be done that way. Read any archive. Everybody's got a twist on it. Everybody's got a pull on it. Everybody's got another version. Why can't we just go back to what the big book says and then do that? Number one reason alcoholics and addicts, as I understand it, see it in this fellowship, the alcoholics don't stay sober is they won't turn around and give it back to the newcomer. If you've been in this fellowship about 3 months and you haven't finished the steps, you are way late. You're taking too long to work them. The book says rapidly. Because let me tell you something, folks. I'll wait on you a couple of months. And then I'm going to get in your face and ask you why you're a little selfish and self-centered, but wasn't at the treatment center helping us carry the message. The arrogance of you to sit on the stupid shit for 6 months. While we got people out here dying tonight because they don't have enough people to carry the message. We need help carrying the message of hope. God, those people in 1987, folks, they knew I didn't have a bunch of time waiting in me. The week I was there, they set me right in front of the telephone and said, Chris, when that phone rings, you answer it. I said, buddy, I'm still detoxing for Christ's sake. And you want me to answer the phone? Chris, we're right here to help you. We'll tell you what to say. The meeting schedules are right there. Mostly it's just information or wrong number. Hell, what difference does it make? Can you do something for somebody else? Yes, I can. Phone rang, and I just... And they said, well, oh shit, what do I say? Say, Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous. And somebody wanted a meeting schedule. Al-Anon meeting. Yep, got one tonight, 7 o'clock, right here. Okay. Stand a little... No, I ain't kidding you, I've seen it 1,000 times. Stand a little taller. I got that one. I took care of that. Isn't that right? But for the first time, I started doing what they asked me to do. I wasn't visiting this group anymore. This was my group. You know? And from then on, you know, somebody answered, hey, don't touch that phone. That's mine. I've got that. This is very important shit here. This is very important stuff. I got the telephone right now. Then thank you very much. You see? It's my... But it was... I became a part of me. And that's what it's about. I'm participating in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life changed immediately. And I got feeling better. And the desire to use left. Guys, within weeks of coming into this fellowship, the desire to drink alcohol left me. And it wasn't because I was doing an extended third column, and then it was because I was helping other alcoholics in my own way get sober. Every one of you in this room that brought a big book in, ever brings a big book into a meeting, I love you. Every one of you cats that ever said yes to somebody that asked them to sponsor or picked up a commitment or poured coffee or did anything to give back, I am so... Folks, I'm not playing words patty cake with you. I'm not trying to blow smoke up anybody's ass. I'm trying to say this. You've got my undying admiration. Every single one of you. And you guys that are sitting on the periphery and won't help anybody... And won't participate in a fellowship that's saving so many lives? Bless you. Bless you. But when you see the other people's lives skyrocketing past you, and you see them getting the good jobs and the good relationships, and you see their life take off and rocket off into the fourth dimension, and you see that big shitty grin on their face, don't come to me and wah, wah, wah. I'll say this one more thing and let you out because we got to go. We got to stick together. You cats in this room, there's a bunch of you that are little big book thumpers, and I get to stay up with you with email and on the phones and stuff. Miss Denise back over there, there's a bunch of you in here, Tom. A bunch of you cats that I know and love. I'm going to tell you something. We need to stay together because it's tough out there in the real world, you know. I'm working in a hospital where I've got therapists that work there that tell the patient that they're always going to be recovering. You see, you'd think people would understand. They've been around the fellowship. They've been sober a long time, but they still don't understand what's in the book. And the message that some of these cats are carrying is toxic. It's terrible. And if you're not in there, I'm going to tell you something. You bring a big book into a meeting in the places that I go, and they'll laugh at you. Who the hell do you think you are, Mr. Bill Wilson? Okay, but we take it. I'm going to tell you something, folks. When you get it thrown back in your face, and when somebody makes fun of you for sharing the hope and getting passionate about recovery, and you're raising your voice a little bit, and you're getting excited, and somebody shoots a hole in you and talks to you about a stupid pink cloud, I'm going to tell you something. I want to make sure you got my number, and I want you to call me so I can love on your little neck, and we can share and visit with each other, and I can help you get back on track so you can go back in there and do it again. Because I'm going to tell you, there's a bunch of people out there that would like to see a bunch of us in this room shut up. There's a bunch of people out there that we make real uncomfortable. Because what are we doing? No, we're standing for something. We're standing for something that needs to be stood for. The only thing that we've known that works for alcoholics is the 12 steps, the spiritual experience. And we know how to get you connected, but it's an unpopular. It's unpopular message. Y'all keep doing it. And y'all stick close. And that little ring of friendships that we've got working here will just continue to grow and grow and grow. And it's okay if you don't want to be a part of us. If you don't want to feel the fire. If you don't want to stand in the trench with us. No sweat. No sweat. I'm honored to know every one of you. Thank you so much.